Hello everyone, welcome to another edition of Talking Tech. I'm Stephen Jolly. With me, Vision Australia Adaptive Technology Consultant David Woodbridge, talking to us from the central coast of New South Wales. And David, we've got a new batch of listeners this week, our friends at 5RPH in Adelaide.
I know, I think it's wonderful to actually spread the word more and more, so I hope the listeners get as much out of it than the listeners that do already. So thank you for listening.
Yes, and we hope to be talking to you for many, many weeks, months, and who knows what beyond that.
Indeed.
Well, what we do for new listeners is talk about a number of technology issues that are of particular interest to people who are blind or have low vision. And David, as regular listeners know, is quite informed on all this sort of stuff and very articulate too, gets straight into it. So let's get straight into the first point, Flexi, which is a marvellous app which you might explain to people, but it's changing a little bit.
It is. So the original Flexi app is a pattern recognition keyboard app where you can literally type the word or letter positions on a keyboard and then the software predicts what word you're meant to type. So you don't have to physically find the T, the H or the E for the word that. You just pattern type it on the keyboard where the keys would be normally. And up until now, that app's been accessible. The main app now is not accessible because the developers changed the underlying code because they have other development work going on. So there's a new app called Flexi VO, and Flexi is actually F-L-E-K-S-Y, so Flexi space VO for voiceover users. And that's the one that's now recommended to be used by the developer because it's accessible. And if you indeed run the main Flexi app now, you're actually told that if you're a voiceover user to go off and download the other version. And what was reassuring to me earlier this week was the fact that they actually said that this is a temporary measure. We are making attempts and will make the main app accessible again. It's just that in the interim, please go and use this other one. So I found that quite reassuring.
Yes, because otherwise there would have been a danger that those of us who use accessibility techniques might have been a bit marginalised.
Exactly, yes.
Mm. Yeah, great app, that one. iPhone app. Is it on other smart platforms as well?
Unfortunately, the version that I know about on the Android platform is currently not accessible via TalkBack.
Right.
So at the moment, it's only for iOS, so the iPhone, iPod Touch or iPad.
Yes. Now, the Super Bowl. I don't usually talk about the Super Bowl on the radio, but there was a special moment in the Super Bowl presentation this year for accessibility.
There was. Now, normally I try and ignore anything to do with the Super Bowl on Twitter. It was just flooded with tweets all the time. But this caught my attention from Media Access Australia, actually. Microsoft actually had a 60-second ad on assistive technology and how it changed the life of a particular retired footballer. And he was using what's called eye gaze or eye track technology to be able to communicate using a Microsoft Surface tablet. And the software basically works. It detects where you're looking on the screen and you can do certain functions by eye movements. And he was able to, in the ad, to be able to verbally communicate, because he can't talk, what his needs are and how technology actually changed his life. So I think it's fantastic that, you know, in a major Super Bowl, that, you know, even a 30-second ad can cost $4 million. And Microsoft wants to let the whole world know, as does Apple and Google, how important accessibility is for everyone, not just for blind and low vision folks. So I thought it was a special moment yet again that assistive technology was again talked about at a major, in this case, sporting event in the States.
And that's something we don't think about enough, because we focus so much on the blindness and low vision needs, is the special access requirements for people with various physical disabilities.
That's right. And when I used to do web development, or I still do it a little bit, but in web development in the 90s, it was always beaten into me that, yes, I'm a blind person, but it's always extremely important to look at all universal access accessibility issues, not just for blind and low vision. So even though it wasn't directly blindness and low vision related, it was still assistive technology related, and I thought it was absolutely brilliant.
Yes, yeah, so a great development. Mm. Now, a very interesting thing called sight cues from AI Squared.
Yes, now this is an interesting one for developers. And as with all the stuff we talk about in our shows, you can get to the links that each of these stories refers to on my blog. And that's actually http://davidwoodbridge.com. And on there, that's where I put all the links for these stories. But getting back to this main story, it's basically IIsquared, the developers of ZoomText, allowing developers to put specific code in their web pages so that then it allows that web page to be magnified or spoken through text-to-speech, even though you don't have any low vision or talking software running on your computer. And the site link on the show notes actually has a demo site that developers can go and look at and see how this SiteQ technology actually works in a real live situation. So again, it's a way of bringing assistive technology to people that may not have access to it or on their machines. And it just opens up, you know, more horizons for people using this technology.
What's that address again for all the information that comes out of this program?
It's http://davidwoodbridge, all one word, .blogspot.com.
Right, so the main thing to remember if you're trying to take it away by memory from listening to this is the davidwoodbridge.blogspot and just a .com.
Correct.
Yep, great. Okay, now, of course, you have to have some Apple news for us.
Indeed. So just quickly, the Apple TV, which used to share its categorization on the Apple Online Store in the iPod section, now has its own category. So it's along the same level as the iPhone, the iPad, the Mac now. And of course, speculation is now is because Apple's elevated it to a bigger category. It's a big boy now, so to speak. Speculation is that the Apple TV is about to be updated to, you know, maybe play games or run other iOS apps or let you do other fantastic things. So we'll soon find out in the next couple of months whether that's going to be true or not. And while I'm talking about Apple stuff, there was an article from a Macworld contributor called Kirk, or first name's Kirk, and basically he said with the earnings, the Q1 earnings from Apple last week or two.
Now, Q1 earnings, you better explain.
Q1, yep, quarterly result earnings from Apple because they do it differently to everybody else, of course. Their iPod earnings were down 52%. So for the iPod Shuffle, the iPod Nano. And so the speculation is, well, because the smartphones can play MP3 files now and they've all got MP3 players built into it, that's why that category is getting less and less. They still sold 20 million units, though, which is still pretty good for a business. And people that have been following me for a while know that I still use my iPod Nano. That's turned into my watch with my watch band. I've just finished listening to the whole cricket season on my iPod Nano with my headphones literally plugged into my watch on my wrist. So it's still useful for that sort of thing, still useful for exercising. But again, because smartphones, Android and Apple have MP3 players built in, that's why that category is getting so small now. And I wouldn't be surprised eventually whether it's just put to sleep.
Yes, yet it was really what started it all, wasn't it, some years ago?
Yes, absolutely, and particularly with the iPod Classic, which is not quite accessible, but you've still got a 160 gigabyte hard drive in there to store all your music files. So it's still a great device, but who knows, we'll see maybe in the next 12 to 24 months, it may be quietly changed.
One of the things I like about what you do, David, is you seem to be able to find some historical material to include in the program from time to time. And you're thinking about the technologies that look to be fading into history, if they haven't already.
They do, and this was in the Sydney Morning Herald, and it just caught my attention because I actually came across quite a few of these devices. And of course, number one was the Atari console. That was the game console playing on your TV screen. That's sort of gone by the by. The dot matrix printer, while it's probably not quite gone away because receipt printers and that sort of stuff still use dot matrix, I can't remember the last time I actually personally owned a dot matrix printer. The floppy disk, most PCs you get these days don't have a floppy disk drive in them now. they've gone by the by. And I think the last time I saw an actual floppy disk itself was about maybe 10 years ago now.
It would be, wouldn't it? And as a matter of fact, the floppy disks can be a bit of a worry. I know someone, and I won't name him in case he's listening, who had some software on floppy disks, and he thought, oh, I'll just copy these onto my machine. He'd forgotten that those disks had been, or some of them had been, infected by a thing called the Stone virus. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. That's right. That was a classic one, wasn't it?
And
it's also important to point out that they're actually magnetic too, so you can actually demagnetize them fairly easily if you're not careful, depending on where you store them to.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Number five was the Commodore 64, the old famous Commodore computer that everybody's sort of heard about in the mid-80s and 90s. The famous...
Yes, that's really quite one to remember, isn't it? The Commodore 64 was very famous at the time, and you still think of that as an example of the computers of that time, whereas you can't name too many others.
That's right, and my cousin had one, and he loved it, and he was always showing me what it could do all the time. The PDA, the Personal Data Assistant, I had one that was from Dell that had some speech software on it probably in the late 90s, and that one was actually very, very useful but a bit limited compared to what smartphones can do these days. And sort of, I guess, coming from that was the Palm Pilot, and you know, everybody says how wonderful the Palm Pilot interface was. It wasn't accessible, but from an interface point of view, it was apparently quite good. And again, that's another one that's gone by the by.
Yes, certainly.
The famous CD-ROM bundle. I remember when I used to buy software, particularly in the 90s, I used to get a book with a CD in it or a manual with a CD in it. And most of the time these days, you get a product key and you go online and you download the software.
Yeah, I think Internet Explorer, was it version 3 or version 4, would come in magazines or other books with a CD there, and you just load it from the CD.
That's right, and I used to run a bulletin board in the mid-80s and 90s, and when my software came on CD, there was nothing to do with the internet.
And, of course, we used to get our screen readers on floppy disks. How many floppy disks would it take for today's JAWS or window eyes, do you think, David?
I think at the moment there'd probably be quite a lot, so I would imagine maybe 20 to 30. The original JAWS only came on 5 disk, but that was because it didn't have the software synthesizer. So, yes, I think it's probably about 20 or 30 these days.
Might even be more because it's up around over 100 megs, I think.
Yeah. That's true. I forgot they're only 1.4 megs each.
Now, the Symbian mobile phones, thing of the past, just about?
Yes, so Symbian phones are now gone by the by. And, of course, our famous one was the Nokia phones with the Torx software. And, of course, Nokia's gone over to Microsoft Windows Phone now. And, of course, the last one on the list, which is very, very sad because it was my first introduction to computers, was, of course, Microsoft DOS.
MS-DOS, yep. We all felt so secure in the text environment before the nasty graphics came along.
Yes, and that was my favourite system. So, yes, that's gone by and by now.
The GUI, Graphic User Interface. David Woodbridge, Adaptive Technology Consultant with Vision Australia. We'll talk again next week, David. This has been Talking Tech. I'm Stephen Jolly.